I'm remembering back of the first piece of equipment I had to repair. My grandfather was in the restaurant with me. He was just sees that I'm staring at this ice machine. And he's like, what's wrong with it? I said, I don't
know. Javier did not have a TV when he was a kid.
No. I had an ice machine. I'm staring at it. I'm like, I don't know. It's broken. It's not working. And I just called the repair guy. My grandfather was like, go get your screwdriver right now. Is the repair guy on his way? It was actually great advice.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Kitchen Confidential, and this is our series, Cream, Cash Rules Everything Around Meals to get your cheddar and pay off a lot of bills, y'all. Yeah. Last week, we talked about the hardware and software you're using for success and focused on the point of sales and a lot of what happens at the counter and the front of the house. So this episode, we're going to be talking about the kitchen, big toys with big price tags. Today, we're going to be looking at all the tools in the back of the house and see how you can stretch a dollar by buying smart, keeping things running efficiently, and increasing the efficiency of your team. Some of your most expensive purchases are in the back of the house, and these tools can be the identity of your entire establishment. You can't really have a top-notch pizza shop without a top-notch oven, you know what I'm saying? We talked with Ray from Root Pairs in our last episode, and there were lots of great lessons in the subject that came from his deep experience in the restaurant industry and working with his company, Root Pairs. Give that a listen if you haven't already, and you'll see we bring back a few of those key lessons in this episode, highlighting truly how important they are. Quick fire. What's the first thing you think of, Javi, when I say, time to buy a new stove or oven, one of those big chunky boys in the back?
I hated hearing that. I would instantly run back there. First thing that comes to mind is, can we repair this thing?
Yeah.
I'm not about to fork over the amount of money it cost me to originally get it. So what do you think?
Same thing. Like, this is going to be expensive. Like, walk back out of the room and come back in with better news. There's no cheap version of that. Yeah. So the kitchen houses some of the most expensive pieces of equipment, and this is the heart of your restaurant. Like your heart. You want to make sure that thing's pumping for as long and efficiently as possible. But do you take care of our kitchen the same way we take care of our heart? Do we give our kitchen checkups? Do you make sure it gets the TLC it needs to keep going on as it ages? Or do we run it ragged, asking for more and more, and then acting surprised when it gives out on us? The tools we have in the kitchen are not only expensive, but they help give your restaurant's identity and determine how efficiently you and your team can work. We're going to touch on five areas where you can spend smartly in the kitchen, touching on the tools and equipment you have in the kitchen, but also diving into the design and layout, how you store things and how you set up your storage area. We'll talk about the increased value of the equipment by having it last longer with preventative maintenance. And finally, we'll talk about your kitchen team and the things you can provide for them in the restaurant, as well as the associated costs and the returns on those. Get your apron and join me in the kitchen because we got orders stacking up. It's time to get cooking.
All right. We'll start off with Javi. Talk to us about what you look for when picking out big ticket kitchen equipment.
I first look at buying the right equipment, the right tools. They need to be, if I'm going to make that large expense, I want to make it once. So that might be, I'm not going to buy something cheap. I might want to buy something. The one thing I do look at is buying something that I can repair.
Yeah.
Something that is going to be long term that I could easily find parts for, that I can get repair people there for. We just hit on this last week.
If you listen to our interview, I brought up the right to repair. That's such a big thing of like these people that make the stuff you spend so much money on and making it so you can like fix that. And the tools are available.
Tools are available to actually work on it. Yeah. I've spent money buying cheap equipment just to get the place open. And within 6 months, everything's broken. I can't repair it. I'm replacing things. So mainly looking for things that I'm going to not have to replace, just repair. The other thing is the right tools can open up new streams of income.
Yeah.
And so I've gone out and bought like outdoor cooking grills. And then next thing I know, I'm doing farmers markets. I'm doing pop-ups.
And then those additional income streams are like so killer. And it opens up like farmers market. You might be doing that one thing, but then all of a sudden you've got all these catering requests and stuff. Yeah. And then that's stuff that keeps the lights on.
Do like a farmers market, it's exposure for you. So you're going to get a lot of people coming up.
Any and going,
hey, can you do my wedding? Can you do my graduation? Yeah,
totally. You can get paid to market instead of paying someone else.
Yes. And I was actually making great money doing that once a week.
Yeah.
Because it takes a small team and it's just, mm-hmm. it's marketing money that you're getting paid for.
Yeah. Like, and it's really a fixed cost. So, you know, catering, that's the good thing about catering is, you know, if someone says, I need, you know, catering for 100 people, you make the catering for 100 people, not 120. Like in the restaurant, you're like, all right, let me prep this. I'll have this extra or whatever. But yeah, you've got the exact right amount. It's all stuff that you're staffing. You know exactly how many people you need to get that product done. So you can keep your like margins as dead low as possible.
Dead low. So let me ask you, Norwood, when would you lease rather than buy?
Kind of looking at the value and also things that like change a lot. So things that are like higher tech. And that's a good leasing option.
Yeah, there you go.
And then stuff that are like problematic as hell. So like ice machine, something that's going to want to break all the time. That's going to require a lot of repairs and stuff. So those are like condenser kind of heavy things.
Yeah.
Those are great things to lease. Ice machines are great to lease.
And, yeah. You know what I found is Coca-Cola, a lot of them, it just bundles with it. They'll give you the machine. They'll give you the ice machine on top. I mean, you got to, look at whatever equipment you can get from, especially opening up a restaurant. Yeah. You're very pinched on money, but what can you get from vendors already?
Yeah, you're like definitely the king of that. Like always, it's so good to have it hammered back in and brought back up because it's like, it's such a good tip. Like if someone else will pay for it, have them pay for it.
Yeah,
like,
Rockstar Energy Drink came and said, we will put a cooler for our drinks right here on your counter. Perfect. Yeah. Coca-Cola said, we'll put a cooler as long as it's visible right behind the cash register for all of your sodas. These are all things I didn't have to pay. And people go out and actually buy these double door refrigerators and this and that. You don't really need to. You can talk to your vendor and say, look, here's my idea. I'm going to have this. If I give you this visibility to your brand, are you guys willing to bring it in for me? A lot of times it's a yes.
So yeah, I think about one thing. Leasing versus buying. Like what's the full kind of price tag? But how do you break that down when you're looking at a piece of equipment? Like the whole like full price tag, not just like what's the sticker right there, but how do you break down like the whole price of a product?
I know for me it is the lifelong that I look into it. So if I buy something, I'm like, am I going to have to maintain this and bring somebody in every 3-4 months? That's an expense that I have to look at. A lot of machine and equipment out there is set up, and the industry knows that it should be maintained every night by your staff, you know, and kept up. So they even develop and make, you know, equipment that's made for that. It's easy to clean up. It's easy to repair. It's easy to, you know, kind of maintain yourself. So I look for stuff that my crew is going to be able to maintain.
Yeah, totally. What's your feeling on used stuff? Speaking about maintained stuff and like
that, you know what? That's a really, really good point. Right now, the industry, you know, during COVID got shattered. And so there's warehouses all over the U.S. filled with this equipment. So I would never say buy anything new. I was actually surprised. I would always buy everything new. And the way I would do it is like I'd bundle all my equipment and say, I have $250,000. I need to buy an equipment for this restaurant. Here is all the specs I need. And I would shop it around. So I would take it to different shops, equipment shops, and say, you give me the best numbers. Mm-hmm. They'd come back and say, oh, I can meet that, but I got to go with the cheaper brand on the XYZ. Okay, fine. But then you compare all those. And that's how I would bid it all out.
Nice.
But once it was in there, it was like, you know, is there something used I could do? A $10,000 oven can be a $1,500 oven in a warehouse.
Yeah.
And they'll deliver it. They'll bring it to you clean. They'll even sometimes warranty it up to a year on parts and stuff. So, yeah, right now with this, you know, just so
auctions
much
are great for that too, for used stuff. Like restaurant auctions, like that's a great spot to buy like your hotel pans, all that like little things.
All the small wares.
That add up hella fast. Mm-hmm. Like those things, you know, especially if you're buying them new or like, you know, it can be $20, $40, $50 to $100, some of this equipment, like some of the smaller stuff.
Yeah, it ends up being $10,000, $20,000 in pans and random stuff, spoons, pans. Pans are expensive.
Yeah. And those are the real things you can get pennies, really, truly get pennies on the dollar when you're buying it. Because, like, when it is, like, 100 pans that someone doesn't need, they're super in the way. And they're not looking at that as, like, oh, this oven I can get a grand for over, like, what I'm, like, looking for. Yeah. This I can get a couple grand for. But when they're looking at, spoons, forks, hotel pans, like those kind of the smaller things. Cambros are a big one. They're like, oh, it's just in the way, and they're only seeing, you know, $1 here, $1 here, not $200 sitting there as a group. Like, and that's great ways to kind of sneak in there.
Yeah. Yeah, the things that aren't gonna really stand out look like you bought them used. You're not gonna buy like a high chair used, you know, but you're gonna go out and get the pans that are gonna get scrubbed every night. So.
It's a little wobbly, but
but it works.
We also bring in helmets for the kids too, so if they hit the ground, like, it's not a biggie. Nice. Yeah I think and then like you said, having your employees like part of the process of like helping keep the machinery up, like seeing who can you know, like, hey, who knows how to do this XYZ, like reaching out to them,
getting their buy-in. I would get their buy-in early on. I found when I set up a restaurant and I did it myself, maybe my brother and a few family members came in and we set it up. Exciting. You get a whole new crew and then you go, here's your equipment. It's not the same when I hired the crew ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then the equipment shows up and they help me develop it and put it into the right places and stuff. They take ownership a lot more.
Yeah.
So that would
be, and when things get broken, you know, not in super like down on people, but I'm always like, hey, the more money I spend on equipment, the less money I can spend on you.
Yeah.
Like, let's take care of this stuff, guys.
The more,
That's great, guys. You guys talked about all the amazing toys and how to get them. But Norwood, can you tell us what the value is in a well-designed kitchen layout? For me, they all look the same. You guys are talking about ovens and everything. It all looks the same to me. So
before this, we were talking about McDonald's and In-N-Out, and like, and especially in these QSR spots, like that was one of McDonald's like early on things that set it apart from like their other competitors. Like, is going in and thinking about where they're laying things out and making a smooth flow designed for efficiency. When I was at the Chase Center, 18,000 people every night. Warriors always had a packed house. So we had to think about that. So you have 4 or 5 people serving, you know, a couple hundred, thousands of items out of those eateries. Mm-hmm. And you really think about crossing over. How many times does someone run into someone else? How many?
Right.
So you start of looking at like zones of ownership.
Right.
And you start thinking about that. And so like how can this person be set up for efficiency here? How can I then I look at my menu. And your menu, you should be looking at your menu like as you design your kitchen. And so you shouldn't have, if a grill guy needs, you know, this veggie, it shouldn't be shared with the oven guy all the way across the line. Totally. So he's got to walk across 2 other people to get to that one thing. Same thing, like this happens with desserts a lot. If you don't have a specific pastry chef or a dessert area or something like that, they'll have like a couple of desserts that don't get ordered too much. And then like the ice cream will be in the back of the freezer, in the back of the kitchen. Yeah. So everything's got to come to a halting stop. So then, like I said, design your menu for efficiency. So if you don't really use that, don't offer ice cream on any desserts. Have like a cool like fudgy brownie or thing that's baked fresh that can be like done fresh, and you're highlighting your good things in your kitchen, but you're setting yourself up for success because you're kind of eliminating these runs across the kitchen. So
those are great. The one thing I'll add to that, my grandfather kind of told me this, and it actually hits on exactly. It's a swan dance. It's a song.
Exactly.
It's a
like
song.
That.
Yeah. It's a song and dance, and you are literally. Everyone is cohesively moving in a kitchen, and one person running through it. I had a manager meeting, and all the cooks said, "Hey, you need to stop letting the servers go through our line because they're using it to go fill up their chips drawer." And just I didn't realize that little like simple that. Thing would disrupt a lunch rush because they would go, "Oh, here comes," you know, and they would stop. I'm like, "You're ruining the dance."
Yeah.
And so the little things like that really do make a big difference.
When I was with Cordavi, we got a. Top 20 new restaurants in America with Esquire, like really nice fine dining spot, did like 12 course dinners and stuff.
Nice.
But it was in Charleston. So those houses, you know, they're 200-300 year old houses that you're building these restaurants in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you can throw, like bust down a wall or whatever, and expand your kitchen or whatever, because it's all a preservation society.
Yeah.
They're like, that's how it is.
You're fitting your concept into this.
So we were like loaded up. With so much kitchen equipment, this tiny little space. Yeah. And me and one of the owners, when we were on the line, like it was literally like those like hippos dancing in Fantasia. Like yeah, it was like yeah. that, like two big
but
boys.
But it looks beautiful
like,
when it works.
Yeah, yeah.
You literally get through a like lunch rush or a dinner rush and you're like, why was that so easy?
Yeah.
Why did yesterday seem like chaos compared to today? And we sold more today. It's that. If you get one person who's not dancing with you. Yeah. And they'll totally jack
and
it
so
up.
And so something about that, like dancing, like so that's something In-N-Out does. It's super unique. Everyone's trained on everything in there, so that's where mm-hmm. it does look like ants running around and like staying busy and stuff mm-hmm. because it's super well staffed. They're paid well and everything, so everyone's got that buy-in of like they're happy to be there. And so by having everyone trained on everything, once they see, you know, up. We need extra hands, busting potatoes, like making fries in the back. That's like, great. Oh, there's a couple people in line. So two people pop off this and then just nice. Run on the register and everyone can kind of just jump right into those spots. So that's another thing of like layout, like kind of thinking about is like training and stuff too. It's not yeah. just like where you put everything, but are you going to have it just nice and open so that everyone mm-hmm. can just bust into like where those spots are.
And what little break, like I remember I opened a restaurant that I needed. We had a lot of prepping that needed yeah. to be done constantly.
Everybody's
so ready. I had to pull yeah. them away from the main kitchen going on, you know. I had to like figure out a way to like maybe we do need another hood over there to prep more beans, more this yeah. more that, because they're messing up this line. I'm not efficient over here, so let's create.
And that's a great thing too, if you're setting up your kitchen, think about, especially like you use that prep example mm-hmm. or is my prep creating grease?
Yeah.
And so if it's not, then you can get an electrical induction yeah. Thing or a steam jacket or something like that. Something mm-hmm. steam jacket's like that big pot with the steam on the bottom, like, you know, at home, like it's a big steam well or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. a spot where you can do your stocks and stuff like that. Or if you're doing like big production of beans or mm-hmm. something like that. So there's great tools that you can sure. use to kind of spread out in the kitchen like that, like mm-hmm. you're saying, without like... or like, because I've been in big kitchens in the South, like where you do have a second story, like production, like yeah. prep kitchen, you got the hood and you got a totally different range of firepower. Yeah. But especially if you're mom and pops, think about what you're prepping. And especially like if you're doing stocks, beans, if it's not producing grease, take it away from the line. Let those guys rock. Let them cook with all the burners yeah. like that. But that's totally another way. Just like the server walking through to get chips, that pot's mm-hmm. bubbling and right in the middle that's not for service.
Yeah.
Totally can like disrupt your like that dance. It's all about that dance. You want to keep your people dancing. Like you don't, mm-hmm. it's like the DJ, someone bumping the DJ booth and making yeah, the record boo. Skip. Like everybody's like comes to a halt and they're like,
you don't want
to
be that guy.
Oh, what? Whack.
Yeah.
But your layout too, it's not just work and stuff. It's also, mm-hmm. A feature. Your mm-hmm. kitchen, open yeah. kitchens are a feature. You've talked about this yeah. like before of like
visually
breaking down the walls and bringing some more, being able to see it more. I've been in and ran plenty of kitchens where it's like, yeah, open kitchen. It's all part of the show. Mm-hmm. We've had chef tables at places. Like it's always, so it's kind of thinking the layout, like, you have the chef tables and stuff at the traditional kind of restaurants, but like it's fun to, mix it up. So look at the layouts of food services that are outside of your style. Mm-hmm. So sushi, like a yeah. raw bar, yep. a traditional raw yep. bar and stuff like that can have a little more incorporated and kind of bring the elements of a sushi chef kind of into like that raw bar presentation. Like mm-hmm. And that opens up another service for you. That hibachi style, cooking in front of them on those hibachi table.
Yeah.
That's something you can like figure out, like play around with. Are we doing like maybe a bar with like a big cooking space like that that could be cooking in front of people? There's always
that comes into even layout of your products.
Yeah, it's
like literally that you're pulling from, that becomes a visual aspect of it, not just the equipment.
Yeah,
you're talking about like where the pan's gonna go to hold this food or that.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're kind of like bringing it to new spaces,
right?
Here's one really good example of that is State Bird Provisions mm-hmm. in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The owners are both James Beard Award winning. The wife's a pastry chef there, the owner, the husband's the main chef, and yeah, she's James Beard Award winning for pastries and service. Nice. Like they have one for the restaurant and it's American style food done in a dim sum presentation. Mm-hmm. So they go around, but they have these like, she makes these amazing little ice cream sandwiches that are done. She's beautifully static. And so you go around or it's like State Birds. They have sweet. Quail, like southern fried quail dish. So it's like a baby version of a whole like fried chicken dinner. Wow. Like, but it's like, it's taking that dim sum presentation yeah. and making, so it's like your
that's
layout.
Neat. They're, so, yeah, they're crossing
exactly.
over.
So yeah. your layout can totally be like a new fresh thing mm-hmm. of like I'm saying, so it's layout, yeah, it goes into so many different things. It's the working flow in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. It's presenting your space as a focal point. And then it's also, rethinking of how you're laying stuff out to like maybe just make a fresh concept or something that's just super unique to you and kind of stand out in the sea of like.
Yeah, it makes people happy to see something new.
Totally. People dig it.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
This is all great, guys. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to the stuff that sometimes people look at not so great. Javi, how can you get ahead of kitchen problems, and what exactly is preventative maintenance? Don't you just fix things when they break down?
Yeah, I used to fix things when they would just break down, and that got really expensive.
Yeah.
And that's why last week bringing in, Ray again, when we had repairs, he brought up a lot of really good points that I've been hitting on since, opening up. But opening up your first restaurant, when it's money coming out of your pocket, you want to make sure that people maintain and take care of things. But then you quickly realize no one cares as much as I do for this equipment. They might care about the business, but it's they're being asked to do so much, they're not going to care about maintaining these
things. So that's the question. Yeah. How do you get them to care?
I had to create checklists. I had to create things that were like, I'm asking you to not only be a cook, I'm asking you to oversee my equipment.
Yeah.
And here it's a new thing for them too. They all of a sudden they're getting asked to like, okay, you want me to step up and not just cook like I did in my last restaurant. You want me to do what?
You're like,
here's my checklist. I need you to look at every day.
The dad on Saturday night, bring it on by 9:30 and take care. Like
stand at the door with a shotgun. Yeah. Did you check off my equipment? No, the what I would do is break down everything in my, I took a clipboard, I first made a list of all the equipment that I needed to be serviced and that I wanted to get checked often. Then I turned around and said, okay, looking at what the manufacturer recommends, looking at the amount of work I put into this equipment, whatever, I should be checking this, all the refrigerators, filters once a week. Yeah. So I would just do like a week. This is a weekly thing. So I went down, I did that. And then that got narrowed to list of like, I need these done daily. I need these done weekly. I need these done monthly, quarterly. And then I found where to put those systems. If it was a daily, it was on a daily laminated list right there in the kitchen, dry erase pen. They checked off. The manager at the end of the night would just go over and make sure they did it. We got pretty intense with systems. We actually got over systemized. And you could do that too. Yeah. Where all of a sudden I'm paying an entire staff to just, review systems and put things in binders and stuff. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. So there's a good balance in that. But I wanted to create a system that is going to be important to me and to them to oversee just how to keep the lights on, how to keep our, dollars in the kitchen rather than on these maintenance guys that are pulling up every week in the back.
Yeah.
So really it was just, creating the systems. I think one of the big important things is actually building a good relationship with your repair people. I ended up starting with just random people because I was opening up in different cities. And so I had different repair people in each one. And then, come to find the same one was willing to travel to the other locations.
Yeah.
And because he just wanted the job, he knew me, he knew my equipment and stuff. And I appreciated that because I need, as much as I can own everything you need to hand it off. Somebody else needs to have ownership of this stuff too. So your staff, and then your staff, you can rely on, somebody who's a good repair guy, who you trust, who's not going to, like we talked about, just.
Yeah. So Ray's saying stick with someone through the long term. Mm-hmm. They do have long memories of seeing and then they see when other people have been there to repair the stuff.
Yeah. They own it. They feel like they really do. It becomes their equipment. I've had that happen where they come in and go, hey, why is this sticker? Who came to fix my equipment? It's what you want. You want the ownership beyond you to go to your staff, to go to your repair people. But, because you're already making the original big investment. So,
Yeah. And it's not just, you're not being able to sell something right then. That's the only cost. Like we talked about before, I think you used that deli analogy. If someone right next door sees you selling sandwiches, like the guy's going in for lunch and got to have that quick in and out kind of thing. They knew you were reliable until you weren't. Yeah. And then they're going to go the deli guy and then they're going to go there until it's not reliable. Like nothing's going to bring them back to you once you kind of lose those like daily. And that's your daily. That's your, you know, when you're writing your cost projections of like, I think 20 people will come here every day. And that's what keeps my doors open. That's one of your 20 people. And those are the like most important, like the tourist people come through, like those things. But those return people, they're your dailies. Like,
yeah, you got to take care of them. You know what? The one, I'll end this. It's funny because it's the one story I'm remembering back of the first piece of equipment I had to repair. My grandfather was in the restaurant with me. He was just sees that I'm staring at this ice machine. And he's like, what's wrong with it? I said, I don't
know. Javier did not have a TV when he was a kid.
No. I had an ice machine. I'm staring at it. I'm like, I don't know. It's broken. It's not working. And I just called the repair guy. My grandfather was like, go get your screwdriver right now. Is the repair guy on his way? It was actually great advice. I was like, yeah, he's on his way. He's like, okay, well, he's already going to, you're picking him to repair this. Go grab your screwdriver right now. Take it apart. Start seeing how everything works. Start tinkering with it. And then once he gets here, stay watching him. So I tinkered around with it. I'm like, oh, I think it's this. And here's this little thing, whatever. He shows up. 15 minutes, he goes, here's what's broken. I'm going to order this, this, and this. He's like, but you were on the right path. He's like, you were figuring it out, this and that. Well, yeah, a few months go by, I didn't even need any repair guys. I knew what part, what. So you slowly have to also become like a glorified repairman when you own your own restaurant. You can have extra belts in the back. Every restaurant had a toolbox. So
that's the minimum you should have is like a stock toolbox.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's the biggest thing I've found. Like simple repairs aren't getting being done because there's not a fucking
screwdriver
in the house. Yep. It's like... Yep. Dude, you can buy that little like handyman special, to-do list. Yeah, like kind of like special. And like it's got your sockets, a couple wrenches, pliers, simple as things, like 20, 30 bucks.
That's what I would do every restaurant.
Like you couldn't get a repair guy in for an hour for 20, 30 bucks. Like that's a minimum, like 50, 60 plus. Like, so yeah, what half an hour of repair guy costs is like what something that could potentially.
A toolbox
like,
and all that,
Zip ties, good duct tape, like a handful of those kind of things that'll like help keep you going like for as long as you need to.
Yeah, all great points.
Great. So we touched earlier, we touched a little bit on the importance of the kitchen and how it's set up. Norwood, what do you do to make your storage area more efficient?
Yeah, so like it's... definitely not the sexiest of topics that we'll ever be talking about, but the storage room is like an often overlooked place that has huge consequences when you do. One, sitting on extra inventory, that's just money that's not in your bank, that's sitting there. Would you rather have a dollar bill or would you rather have a dollar's worth of canned tomatoes that you're not going to use in the back? Because those are 100%, you know, variable. Like you had to spend a dollar to get those tomatoes you're not using, so that's a dollar you should 100% look at that stuff as money that's sitting on your counter or your thing, that's, you know, money that you can't spend because you turned it into canned tomatoes that you're not using. I'm beating up on canned tomatoes right now. But a loss of product due to expiration, again, those canned tomatoes won't last forever either. So if you're not doing FIFO, if you're not practicing, these are like right practices, even if it is stuff that you're using, you might have the back row just waiting for the health inspector to come, ding you there. You're waiting for it, and then you have to throw it out because it's expired. Like, so you're getting written up for, you're getting a B instead of your
Another
A.
Another excuse getting, for them to dig more,
exactly.
too, the health department.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Once you start down that road, you keep them happy. Health inspector's like, if you keep them happy, they're smiling the whole way. Second they got something they got to look for, they're like, all right, this guy's a joker. All right,
now I got to
start looking for everything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. But if you got them happy, they'll be happy all day long. Cleanliness, general cleanliness. Cleanliness is something that obviously you want to clean for so many obvious reasons, but it's also a moral thing. Your morale on your team. Like,
you
want to
work in a clean place.
Exactly.
Clean
places promote happiness, clear minds. Like, if it's, I always say this when people are chopping on a cutting board. Keep your cutting board clean. If your cutting board and your workspace is jumbled, so is your mind. And so you're not going to prep efficiently. You're not going to do this job quickly. It's not going to be, you're not going to remember all the details. I need you to make sure this is done.
Plus it builds
perfectly.
Bad habits.
I mean, not
only in that person's got bad habits already, you know that, but it's going to build bad habits in everyone else.
And just like the cutting board example, like someone on a messy cutting board, it's a good chance of them chopping a finger. Same thing. You got trip hazards. You got stuff that can fall on people when you're not clean. And then, yeah, like you're saying, like when you're not clean, then you got the rodents, insects and stuff. And you get like, if you get ants or German cockroaches or anything like that, they're a nightmare to get rid of. Yeah. You got to stay ahead of all these things. And that, your storeroom right there, that spot that you forget about, that gunky little corner that you don't want to clean up, that the mop can't quite get to, and you keep overlooking it, and they don't want to move the you don't want the staff to move the shelves and stuff. But that's, you know, that's fly central. Fruit flies are going to breed in that. It's all that kind of little spots. Then, like I said, dropping morale. So, yeah, there's so many like ancillary topic reasons to like keep a nice clean storage area, and an organized storage area is going to let you track things quickly and identify those old and overstocked items. Great spot to use specials to get all that stuff out of there. Big specials to burn up your old stuff. Reach out to other restaurants. If you're sitting on, for some ungodly reason, you're sitting on like two cases of nacho cheese,
right,
and you don't even fucking sell nachos, which happens. Like, it's crazy because you did one event that
one catering event
you did a Cinco de Mayo 4 months ago, and you said you wanted to bring in two cans, but you didn't accidentally put two cases, and then it's that there. It's exactly how these things happen. Yeah. But then, because you don't sell nachos, like you're sitting on that 4 months later. If your neighbor sells nachos, knock on the door. Yeah. Dude, I got you a deal.
Yeah, you're going to buy these next week anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, reach out. So your community is always important. Like, but that's how you identify these things, is having a clean space. And then keep as little on hand. I always say, if you can buy it regularly, don't have it in your fucking house. Don't get it out. Get it out of here. If like,
let somebody else store it.
There's stuff you're gonna be there's always stuff that's like, oh, I get this specialty salt from Southern France. So like, make sure you have enough of that so you always have it, because you want to have truth in menus, and you don't want to have to like be like, well, I say it's this, but I bring this in. Went to Costco and I bought it for twice as expensive, or like all these other things. You want to have like the right stuff, man. But if it's like, you know, onions and stuff, and you only use like, you want to get the best deals and stuff, but if it's something that you can get a good price on and you're getting regular, like if you're buying like a case of stuff, bring it in one case at a time. Don't load up on three cases just to have it. Like I had a coworker before at Chase, and he was a big like, let's just order a ton of
get
it because we
in.
Got the space, and we'll just know like till we have it. It's like, dude, these guys aren't, if these guys go out of business, we got bigger problems than like whatever. Like,
Than running out of cheese, totally.
Yeah.
And so you were saying backdoor special. The other thing that, you know, we haven't really hit on is when you're unorganized like that, and you're in your inventory room or in your storage room, it makes it easier for employees to also walk out the door. Because they're like, he's unorganized. He has no clue what he has here.
Yeah.
I'm taking this case.
Yeah, and it's almost like you can't even blame them for it.
No, I know,
like,
I know.
At one point, it's like part of your responsibility.
Exactly.
And then, like I said, with the health department stuff, if you have old stuff or messes like that hidden, like something, like some mess that you weren't paying attention to, it's like failing an open book test. Mm-hmm. You have zero, like, sympathy on my side. Like, I'm not, like, you get the score you deserve at that point. Like, accidents happen, tent might be off on a sink or something like that, little things like that. But yeah, if you're sitting there with expired product on your shelf and the health inspector is the one who sees it, not you or your employees,
right?
You earned that B.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think you've talked about doing for storage. You've talked about, Chinas, you guys did brought in lockers.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge.
At Chase, we had, and even at Apple, like, we had locker rooms, big locker areas.
It's important to give employees their space, because they have stuff they're bringing anyways, and so they're going to fit it in somewhere. That's what I found, is the first restaurant I had was only, well, the first fast casual was about 1,300 square feet. Tiny. But every employee's showing up with a ton of stuff. Their purses, their sweatshirts, as they do. Yeah. And then I was like, oh my gosh, they're shoving it in drawers. Yep. They're throwing it on the back of the computer. They're doing this and that. I was like, this is so disorganized, and it's my fault. Yep. So the lockers were huge.
As owner of the space, I mean, there's an inherent liability involved, and it's part of those things to save your ass too.
Yeah,
give them the space to lock up their stuff. Like, but that's another part of storage, and that's another part in those storerooms. Chop off a little bit of that space, make it for employee storage, for those kind of things. It's a great way to make sure there's uniforms on hand, that they have their uniform space. It's like, hey, you know, throw your hat at the end of the day in the locker.
Yeah,
don't take
it
home.
That's
a big thing. And then it's also an, again, health code like thing. employees have to have, you know, beverages not above prep areas, not above. Yeah. And if you only have these areas, what's available, instead of telling them, I've made the space available for you, but just like, hey, you figure it out kind of thing. They're always going to be in the wrong spot at the wrong time. The health inspector's going to walk in and everyone's going to have a drink. Like someone made Agua Fresca that day and they're like, you know, I'm going to do something nice for everybody and make like Agua Frescas, or it's cold, I'll make hot cocoa. And so everyone just happened. That's the one day that every single person has a drink,
And that's the day the health department's going to walk in.
And that is 100% the day the health department's going to come in. So it's, getting one step ahead and just making sure your crew's taken care of. And it's morale, too. It's hard to keep people in the door. Like, do these things are free, basically, to like have
We're creatures of habit. People want to be told, here's where you put this.
Yeah.
Here's where this goes. I mean, it's you leave it to just them. It's, you know, and everyone to just decide what's going on.
If someone's like, I'm working right here, I'll just put the drink right,
right
here.
Right. that's normal. Yeah. I actually had to have a shelf where I was like, everyone's drinks here. And then I started noticing everyone's grabbing a new cup every time. So I'm like, Sharpie, everyone gets a pen, you write on it. And then it ended up being where somebody went to the dollar store, bought a bunch of plastic cups. Yeah. Threw all their names on them. And that manager was like, oh, great. That's everyone has a cup.
Nice clean of shirts and stuff, and it gets into I think this is a good transition, but like employee water bottles, Chino's brand right on the side.
Yeah, branded.
They're bringing those to work, but they're taking those with them home. It's a little advertising for you every time someone's taking that little sippy sip.
Might as well market it.
Yeah. So staying on the same topic about employees, Javi, how do you make choices around the things that you provide for your staff?
Well, the first job I had with my family, even though they had, the whole family mix between, you know, uncles, aunts, and my dad, is 50 restaurants. And my mom first thing said, you're going to spend, first job you're going to get is dishwashing. First 4 months, I was in the dishwashing pit. And I realized they need mats. Like they need that. I'm glad my mom did that because it put me into every position. And I started breaking down every layout. And I thought before it was like, oh, they must be happy with this. They're not going to tell you their feet hurt and because you're lacking of a mat. They're not going to tell you when we close at night, I don't know where to put these pots. They're just going to throw them around somewhere. So by my mom putting me in all these positions, she would pull me afterwards and go, what'd you learn? 4 months later, washing dishes, what'd you learn? Well, I learned we need mats. I learned we need this. So it's really important to give people those tools. But more than that, it was really important for me to listen to my employees of what they needed. That's what I realized. So I would do employee reviews every quarter, and I would make the time to talk to the employees and make sure that I understood, like, what do we need, you know, in this place to clean it properly, to store things properly, you know, and that's, I would get feedback still from that. But I mean, you got to make sure that we have the tools and everything that the staff needs. And especially if they have physical limitations. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big one. An ADA and all that, the laws and regulations, as I was building my restaurants, kept getting more and more in place. How do you tackle that?
Being at Apple, especially being in such a corporate environment, like you do, it's such a... it just shines such a light on like the ADA equipment and the making sure accessibility.
The need for it.
Yeah, and then you learn like these so many other things, like and then you start thinking like, well, the walk-in's cold, you know, someone needs a jacket, gloves that are able to, someone's breaking down stuff, or like they need
the box cutters, gloves, and stuff.
They need belt to like be able to lift things, like support belt to be able to lift things correctly, like just all these, even to, like if someone needs tools for like helping to cut things. Like there's so many things, but it's
really what it does is it provides the preventative tools and the help so that you don't have the liabilities, that you are protecting your staff, like you're saying, with braces, with the cooler stuff, with, you know, and it just shows you care about them. They're the ones making the money.
You make an inclusive working space and stuff. Yeah. It's so important, especially nowadays. Like make sure everyone's comfortable where they are.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of ongoing costs, I know, with like staffing. With things like towels, your aprons, disposable stuff. Like, we at Apple, we did, again, this got brought up when I was at Chase. And like, when you're doing this big numbers, you start looking at things like costs of like this, I'm buying this 10,000 times a year, and like 3 cents off this, you know, ends up being, you know, like a couple grand, like, or, you know, them when I'm bringing like these, when I'm, you know, taking a quarter off here. So like you run these analysis of like, or paper towels or cloth towels, like what's the best use of that? And then you even run like water use, like analysis and stuff. Like,
I ran all those. And even I went further to say, okay, if I do go cloth though, how many can I have out per shift? And then I would go, because what happened is I'd have Mission Linen show up. They drop off a huge bag of towels. And I would literally throw them up where all the towels went, make a rip in it and go, okay, here is everyone's towels. Before the week was over, I'd be calling Mission Linen back going, I'm out. And so that's when I realized, I'm like, some of these guys are just one water drip, grabbing a towel. So another thing. So yeah, you gotta also
account for that. There's great like single-use options that are super affordable, especially because linens have a per item a fixed cost. It's super easy to kind of look at. And you're like, all right, they use five of these for this person. And you're able to add that up pretty easily. Like, and then to like think of like the effect too of like being like, well, we only have this many linens, and getting that too is like, all right, so how dirty am I going to let this get before I switch over? And then you have a sanitation issue. So that's where I found that disposable single-use stuff, like, and it's not purely like a paper towel, like single-use, but the heavy-duty, like Brawny makes a product that's for commercial use, and they have different thicknesses and like
almost like a towel. Feels like a towel.
Where it's a towel, but it's able to be tossed. So it's like something like if you're cleaning up raw chicken and stuff, do you want someone like dipping that in a bleach bucket and then reusing that to clean off an air cutting board that's wiping it down that's about to be used for like fresh lettuce or something? Like it's such a nice like piece of thought of like the thing too of like, all right, wipe down this. Oh, this is mad nasty. Like I'm tossing this instead of being like thinking a customer, like a staff member's like, all right, I got to get 10 more uses out of this. Like, it's a good. And then what I would do then is the regular towels, cloth towels, those would be for grabbing something hot.
Yeah. Or I think it's a good like combo. That. You're nailing it. It's a good combo of all of that.
And then those hot towels, we'd keep them in a little container by the oven or where you're on the line for the people doing saute and stuff, labeled too. So the health department comes in that.
Oh, nice.
And they are fucking thrilled because they see, like, all right, these reusable linens are being used for hot stuff and it's labeled in these bins, little six pan or something like that by the stove. It also keeps them, your staff from popping them in their pocket and going back in the old habits.
I had that a lot. Yeah, yeah. They would always hang them on their apron.
Yeah, which is you help break those habits by giving them a spot to set it instead of just kind of, and then you have that stack of like the reusable ones with the bleach bucket and stuff, so it's all kind of a single use. And when you say they see you're thinking about that too, they're like, dude, this guy's got it. This guy's like, I don't need to sit there and hammer him about this other silly thing. Or if they do have an accidental, like this one sink was out of temp and like the rest of them are fine, they can kind of overlook certain things like that because they see you got your checking those P's and Q's across the board, across the other stuff.
But yeah, there's a lot of options, and I love how you nailed that. And maybe it's a hybrid. That's really, for me, it was a hybrid. There's the one-time uses, fine. But now that brings back training your staff for what's expected of what.
And being, talking to them about it, too.
Yeah.
And being like, we're spending a lot of money on this. Yeah. Like I said, with this.
Involve
like,
them in the cost.
Like I said, like if I got less money, if I'm buying all the towels, I'm spending all my money on that.
Yeah.
Ain't got any money for you.
I can't keep giving out free meals.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Literally.
Like,
that stuff's kind of got to
like trim up somewhere. And like, that's the last thing I want to do. And like, be very like truthful of that. Or like, dude, the last thing I want to do is take anything from you guys. But like, I have to keep the lights on or else no one here has a job.
Right.
And so if we got to trim fat, like we got to trim fat and we have to have towels. Like, so we can either come together and do this right. You guys can stop wasting these. We can use the single use. We can go with whatever plan I want to implement and we can buy in, or else, you know, Christmas bonuses.
Yeah, that, sorry, that
Christmas
be half,
goose is getting cooked somewhere else.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, but yeah, money's got to come from somewhere.
But then when you have extra money, you get to really play on fun things. And like, and I know you've talked about what you did at Chino's with uniforms before at Apple. Like, we had fun, like, buy them, like, cool, let them have credits to be able to go buy a fun hat to the Apple store, stuff like that.
Yes.
Same thing with the Warriors, like, have that extra money to be able to, like, we just want you in, you know, Warriors. If it's a Warriors game, whatever Warriors hat you want, but being able to have that extra
Did you
cash
supply
is,
them, or do you give them cash?
To,
how does that work?
And stuff.
Oh, you give credits,
like,
so how does it work?
Like, vendor stuff, like our like partnered stuff, would be like, hey, we got these cool like hats for this like event or whatever.
That's interesting.
We got that.
Because a startup, you're going to maybe supply them with a shirt, an apron, a hat, one, and be like, that's what you get, a chili pepper tie, you know, it's like, that's what you get. And then if you, it was really, really hard for me to figure out because some staff members took care of their uniform really well.
Yeah.
And I did, and then I'm punishing them by, you know, not being able to give them because this person doesn't take care of their equipment. So I'm giving it all to them, the other people. So it was a balance. What I ended up doing was giving everyone two sets of uniforms from the day they start. You're required to take care of them. We do evaluations quarterly on you anyways. At that point, I'm going to revisit your uniforms. Do you need another one? Yeah. Because you've been with us for 6 months, you know?
And a fun thing you can do too, like if you are willing to invest in like, and you think it's there, especially for QSR stuff, branded shirts, branded apparel and stuff. And you want to keep like that fresh and have that be part of your brand's identity.
Yep.
That's something too. You can be like, all right, you know, every week you work here, you get half a credit, you know,
I like
shirts
that
are two credits.
Yeah.
A hat's a credit or whatever, however much, but
that's neat.
Give that, like, we keep track of that. And, you know, instead of it coming out of your pocket, kind of sweat equity, like, you
Chuck
know,
E. Cheese working, tickets, bring your raffle tickets
kind
over
of
pick
like,
pick a yo-yo.
And then we do, you know, we do cool shirts every quarter or something like that. And that gives you incentive to like have fun designs. They can customize what they're wearing, but it's all branded too. Mm-hmm. And then you might see them wearing them outside of work, you know, letting them show off what they're proud of, where they're working. They're like, look at this cool new shirt we got. But that's also something that you can throw up on your, you know, behind your checkout. You got those shirts ready to go. Like, same thing when I go to my tattoo parlor, like they've got, you know, like back in SF, Blackheart tattoo shirts. They have new ones. Sick. I was like, oh shit, that one's dope as hell. Here, let me get a tattoo. And then one of those as well. Like,
I hung an actual clothesline because I try to make it look like Mexico, whatever.
Yeah.
I actually hung a clothesline in each restaurant with pins and they had all of our shirts, hats clipped on them,
you know,
40s like mugs.
But it's cool, like you figure out like the same thing, like the drink, like employee having cups back there.
Yeah.
You make these cool ass water bottles that look like 40s and stuff. Like, that's badass. They're gonna be into it, and it gives you something to sell too. So,
and what better to market than your own staff that's wearing them and going out? No, I know. This is all great stuff.
We're all about turning the negatives into positives here, you know.
And I want, and I'll go more into the uniforms because I know we're tapping on it a little in the next episode here. But I'm gonna go more into the Chino's uniforms, kind of how we used to have fun with them.
Yeah, guys, these are all great insights. And we do have a question here from one of our listeners. They said that they can only afford, they are opening a new restaurant and they can only afford used equipment. What are some red flags to look for when shopping for used equipment?
I'll let you go.
Used equipment, one, the red flags, let someone else help you look for those red flags. Restaurant supply shops, some of them will do consignment for people. They'll buy used stuff and refurbish it. Consignment and refurbish are different.
Mm-hmm.
Consignment means that someone is having that person sell it. When I was growing up, I used to buy consignment surfboards. Surf shop I used to go to growing up had a consignment rack. And so it was just stuff they were selling from someone else, but then they also had all their stuff.
That's why, like, when you negotiate on a consignment item, they say, let me call the owner. Yeah. Maybe they'll get it down for that price. Yeah, because it's not theirs.
Really good price. You're not getting too much of a markup from the people because they're not the shop's not investing into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good spot to find like all those items like you're looking for. So I have a little bit of variety too. So you're not going to like one dude for like, it's like I'm selling a used refrigerator on Craigslist.
That's a red flag I look at. If no one's going to be behind it, they just want to pawn me off the equipment. That's a big
equipment. Always should be able to plug it in, give it a test fire. Even if it's gas stuff, it should be everything should be able to, like, if it's, especially if it's not a brick and mortar that you can come back to.
Yeah, if they're
like,
not giving you at least 30 days, two weeks to go.
They should be able to fire it.
Yes.
Refrigeration should be able to come up to temp. Refrigeration, certain things too, should be more of red flags than others. Refrigeration is one where you're kind of like, maybe buy new, maybe buy something that's, you know, at a lower price point, work into something better. But that's where running it is super important because you might have off smells in the condensers. That could be mold in the condensers and stuff, which would make it hard pass.
Mm-hmm.
Never buy anything refrigeration or storage with mold already in it because the stuff, once it's in there, it's basically impossible to get rid of, especially any sort of black mold in refrigeration.
Yeah,
it's a hard pass.
Because it's got like walls in it.
Exactly, and that mold will get into the condensers. It'll get into the ductwork. Where,
you might not see
it. You can't even clean it exactly, but you'll smell it.
Yeah.
Same thing with other stuff.
I've had that.
Make sure anything you can plug in, give it a test run. But lots of like small equipment like that. Robocous blenders always are great. Slap chop kind of things like this fry thing, anything small like that. Yeah. That's like mechanical.
Yeah. And small wears all day.
Yeah. If you can see it and look at it and it's not cracked, it's not worn in bad spots. And then think about too, what you can replace when you're buying stuff and bottom, you know, something's broken, but you can look at it and be like, I can get the replacement. I can get a gasket and replace that. I can fix that. Or I can do, say, so it is a piece of refrigeration thing. Yeah. Everything seems to work fine, but the gaskets are broken.
Yeah.
Bottom, you know, dollar, I'm like, sit there and, you know, be like, yo, it's busted. Yeah. You know, I'll take it, but it's, you know, I got to have like half off or like.
And I would ask the same consignment store.
Yeah.
I'll take it, but what's it going to cost me to replace these? And I'll, what they're going to give you the cost of those filters or whatever it is at that point. But
my
red flags are exactly the same thing, where if I can't find the part or fix it or repair it, I'm not gonna look at it.
Yeah,
if they're not letting me operate it and give me some kind of like at least a 2-week guaranteed, a month that it's gonna not break down, that's a red flag. If it's something that obviously they're it's a small wear or something like that, there's no red flags for that kind of stuff. I mean, you can look at a pan, go perfect. That's where you should be getting like the chops, all that kind of stuff. But it's mainly for the larger equipment that you don't know the issues it's going to come up with.
And that's where, experience. So if you don't have the experience, reach out to someone in your community.
Bring a maintenance guy with you. I brought my maintenance guy with me and go, dude, I'm going to buy three pieces right now. And he would kick them on. He'd look at the burners. He'd do this and that and go, okay, if anything, we're going to need to replace this thermocouple. And that's it. You know what I mean?
If you're going to save a couple grand, it's worth paying. You
know what you're getting
100 or two for having the repair guy come with you. A service kind of call.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally worth it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So hopefully that helps out.
Yeah.
And then shop around, see where if you can get some good deals. But that is some good advice for so this is the our third part for our cream series, Cash Rules Everything Around Meals. So we had great interview last week with Ray from Repairs. If you didn't listen to that yet, go back and listen. Our interviews, chock full of information, and we reach out to folks that have tons of real world experience. So some little detail, you know, some fun little facts that we might not catch in these episodes, like that experience comes through. So listen to that. And we focused on the back of the house. It's different ways to save and get the most out of when you spend. Super important. We talked about the equipment and how to buy and maintain to get the most out of it. Utilizing the best layout and what the future could look like for kitchens. The importance and value of preventative maintenance. The best storage practices. And we talked about spending on different items you provide for your staff. That wraps up that's a great note. Wraps us up on uniforms and how to create that overall vibe for your restaurant. We're going to sneak into the rest of the restaurant, into the dining room, and on that uniform conversation and kind of open that up to the whole branding and like the dining room, the presentation side. I'm looking forward to that. That's always a fun chat. So if the kitchen's the heart of the dining the restaurant, the dining room is its face. And let's make sure it's shining like a diamond without costing like one.